Like Esther Hicks, Linda has comforted thousands of people by offering the empowering guidance and wisdom of Abraham. Linda connects you with information to support your guidance in career, relationships, and health. Vishali has been a big fan of Linda Drake's and has come to rely on her accuracy and compassion. Linda will be appearing on You Are What You Love, the third Saturday of every month. The knowledge Linda's gained through years of communicating with Abraham offers a unique yet comforting perspective of your soul's journey through life, death, and the world beyond. For more information about Linda, to schedule a private phone session, or to purchase her book, Reaching Through the Veil to Heal, go to www.lindadrakebooks.com.
Friends don't let friends go into the light without reading Vishali's You Are What You Love, and now her new release, Wisdom Rising. Reaching enlightenment has never been more entertaining. Go to Vishali's website, www.purplev.com, and order her books. Watch her in action in the multimedia room. Read about her private sessions and enjoy the most beautiful purple website in all of internet land. Anyone who says money can't buy happiness hasn't read Vishali's books, You Are What You Love, and now Wisdom Rising. Order today from Amazon or purplev.com.
Awareness Magazine is the premier holistic publication on the West Coast. Publishing bi-monthly for 15 years now, it covers such issues as alternative health treatments, natural health products, fitness and personal growth, spirituality and environment, and much more. With approximately 210,000 avid readers, we currently have selected distribution stops in Santa Barbara, Ventura, Ojai, Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, Riverside, Phoenix, Sedona, Albuquerque, Taos, Santa Fe, and Hawaii. For advertising or subscription information, call 1-800-758-3223 or visit www.awarenessmag.com.
Friends don't let friends go into the light without reading Vishali's You Are What You Love, and now her new release, Wisdom Rising. Reaching enlightenment has never been more entertaining. Go to Vishali's website, purplev.com, and order her books. Watch her in action in the multimedia room. Read about her private sessions and enjoy the most beautiful purple website in all of internet land. Anyone who says money can't buy happiness hasn't read Vishali's books, You Are What You Love, and now Wisdom Rising. Order today from Amazon or purplev.com.
Welcome to You Are What You Love, your window into the future of spirituality. We're going to talk to you about your life and the evolution of your soul while we bring alive the essence of eternal truth. So here is your host, the author of You Are What You Love, Vishali.
Welcome to another exciting episode of You Are What You Love. And I'm Vishali, the wild child of the airwaves, the spiritual hostess with the wild woman mostess. As you know, I am the Beyond Karma Queen of Literature. And when you go to my website, Purple V, where you can learn more about my book, You Are What You Love, and my soon-to-be-released book, Wisdom Rising. If you buy my books, you too could be a Beyond Karma Queen or King yourself. And as we all know, bad karma is bad, good karma is better, Beyond Karma is bestest. And I think that's how you conjugate the verb to karma. And I want to invite you all officially and formally to purplev.com. It's the most beautiful purple website in all of internet land. And there you can learn about the individual consultations that I give with people. The individual sessions are called self-emergence sessions because the idea with these sessions is to help you separate from the stuff that you are here to get over so that your true self can emerge. And if you're interested in a self-emergence session, you can contact me on the website. You can email me directly. Email me at V as in very vivacious, the Violet Vixen Vishali, purplev.com. And at the bottom of every page on purplev.com is an option to mail me, or you can mail me directly, v@purplev.com. You can even call me at my voicemail, which is area code 239-513-3313. Again, that's 239-513-3313. And if you're interested in your own self-emergence session, email me v@purplev or call me 239-513-3313. And as you know, on You Are What You Love, what we're all about is exploring this spiritual law. You are what you love, and you love whatever you give your attention to. And that's not just a great name for a book and the great name for a radio show. It is. I only steal from the best. But it's also a spiritual law, which means that if you're giving your attention to something limiting, then you love living a limited existence. And if you're giving your attention to something unlimited, then you love living an unlimited existence. And normally we open up the phone lines and take phone calls, but I have an extra special treat for you today. I have one of my most favorite writers in the entire world with us today. His name is Stephen Maines, and I want you to run, not walk, to your computer, because I'm going to give you some really important URL addresses. I want you to go to Stephen, that's Stephen with a V, Stephen Maines, MAINES.com, StephenMaines.com. And you can learn more about his book, which we're going to be talking about, Longinus, Book One of the Merlin Factor. And in a couple of months, as a matter of fact, the same time my Wisdom Rising book is going to be releasing, he's going to be releasing Mirrodin, Book Two of the Merlin Factor. And for any of you out there who have already read Book One of the Merlin Factor, and you've had any type of comment, it has been, I'm going to put a gun to your head if you don't get Book Two out soon. Because as I like to refer to Longinus, Book One of the Merlin Factor, it is literary opium. It is incredibly addictive. And we have the Longinus Challenge for you, which is go to StephenMaines.com, and there you can take a look at the book, and you can download a chapter of the book. And I want you to try and just read the first two pages. And put the book down if you can. You won't be able to, because I'm telling you, potato chips take lessons on how to be addictive from this book. It's incredibly addictive, and each book should come with a disclaimer that says, if you buy this book and you forget to pick up your children at work, you forget to cook dinner for your spouse, you forget to pay your bills because you are too consumed by reading this book, we are not responsible for your addiction to Longinus, Book One of the Merlin Factor. So I also want to direct your attention to a trailer, a YouTube trailer, because a exquisite trailer has been made for Longinus, Book One of the Merlin Factor. And you can see it on YouTube by going to youtube.com/Purple Haze Press. Purple Haze is in all through your brain. Lately, things don't seem the same. Press. P-R-E-S-S, youtube.com/Purple Haze Press. And there you can click on Longinus, the trailer. And I'm going to be talking to more about Stephen because it's an incredible, exquisite piece of flash animation. And I want to remind you all again that at any time you can get any of Stephen's books on my website, which is purplev.com. So if you forget Longinus, you forget Stephen Maines, all you need to know is purplev.com. It's your one-stop shopping for everything that is enlightening, purple, fun, and kind of get your spiritual juices flowing. So without any more delay, Stephen, welcome to You Are What You Love.
Thank you. Great to be here. Wow, what an introduction there.
Well, honey, I think I feel like I've damned you with faint praise.
Thank you.
Couldn't have said enough. So for people who are listening to this, and they're thinking, okay, Longinus, book one of the Merlin Factor. Mm-hmm. What the hell is a Longinus? And I've heard of Merlin the Magician, but what is a Merlin Factor?
Right. What do they have to do with each other?
Yeah. So let's break this down. What the hell, or we should probably say instead of what the hell is a Longinus, it's more the who the hell is a Longinus.
Exactly. Longinus, well, he was a person, a Roman centurion to be exact. His full name was Gaius Cassius Longinus. And he was believed to be the Roman centurion that pierced the side of Christ while Jesus hanged from the cross with his spear. You'll see, especially in Catholic churches, a statue of Christ or a hanging Christ on the wall, for example, with a wound in the rib area. Now, that is believed to be caused by a spear from a Roman centurion. And his name, as I said, was Gaius Cassius Longinus. He's referred to once in the New Testament. And referred to by name in the book of Nicodemus, I believe, which is one of the so-called lost books of the Bible. And my account basically takes his life from that event until his own death many years later. Now, what does that have to do with the Merlin factor or Merlin the Magician? We all know Merlin the Magician from our childhood as being the wizard of King Arthur's court. And basically, Merlin the Magician, we've grown up to believe, is a name, the name of a person. Well, Merlin was actually a title in the ranks of the Druids at the time, which now the Druids were the spiritual, priestly caste of the Celts that lived all throughout Europe and England many, many, many centuries ago, before Rome basically pushed them out of Europe, and they ended up in Ireland was the last place. And excuse me, the Druids basically had a level of ranking called a Merlin that you can reach through many, many years of study and practice of their ways. So the Merlin factor refers to an essence within every one of us that can tap into this magic, this unlimited possibility, which is basically what Merlin the Magician represents and has represented through history. But that's why he's so popular, I believe, particularly when we're young, because children just have this mind that has come so open. Anything is possible. And unfortunately, I think as we grow up, we kind of lose that. But we, for myself especially, I retain that in the sense of Merlin the Magician. I've always had that fascination with this character, and when I started doing the research and I found out that Merlin was actually a position and a title that one achieved, that made it even more fascinating, because that put it in a realm of possibility for anyone, which again reflected the infinite possibility in each one of us. Now, what does that have to do with Centurion Longinus? During Longinus' journey, after the event of piercing Jesus while he was on the cross, a series of events happens to him where he ends up leaving the Roman military service, and part of his escape route is up through Gaul. Now, at this time, there were still pockets of Druids and Celts existing, part of my story touches on the fact that he studied with these Druids and Celts and becomes a Merlin in his own right and has a self-realization to an extent, or the whole story is basically about that journey of self-realization, the catalytic event of the stabbing of Jesus on the cross, if that makes sense.
It does. So the Merlin is a rank or a title in the same way this guy that wears the funny phallic pointed hat, his name isn't Pope. That's just a rank that he's achieved within a group, and that basically, theoretically, the idea is that anybody at some point could achieve that status.
Exactly right. Within the Celtic society, usually the Druids would see something within a child that would tell them on a spirit level that this person is chosen in this life to become a Druid, be it a Merlin, or there were many ranks within the Druidic caste. But the possibility was there for anyone to achieve this within those ranks.
And, you know, I got to tell you, you've heard this joke from me many times, so I'm sorry that I'm really exhausting its comic value with you, but
okay.
I know there are many people who will be privy to this for the first time, so I'm going to go ahead and get some value out of that. If I was going to write a book that had a Roman in it, any kind of Roman from that period, I would have named them Commodius Latrinius. But that aside, obviously my fixation, my Freudian fixation is showing up. But that aside, how do we know that his name is Gaius Cassius Longinus? How do you have a first, middle, and last name? How do we know this?
Well, it's interesting. In Roman history, the last name as we think of it is actually their first name.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was of the family Gaius, so to speak. And Longinus was actually his first name. So as we would think of it in those terms, Gaius Cassius Longinus. So Longinus was actually his given name. And there was a lot of years of research that I did in this. And as I said, in the book of Nicodemus, in one of the so-called lost books of the Bible, he is referred to by name. And after doing some more digging and finding various accounts of this soldier's life, apparently he did exist. And I found several different accounts of his life. It was really interesting. Some of them, one account had him just going on and living a normal soldier's life for the rest of his life. It was not that big of a deal. What he did was just in the line of duty, et cetera, et cetera. He just kind of faded from history. Another account had him being cursed by God, so to speak, to walk the earth forever until the earth is consumed, never being allowed to die. You might call him the very first vampire if you want to go there. Another account had him escape, going through a series of self-realization events, other events than just the stabbing, and questioning his whole mode and what he was doing in the Roman military, what they were doing as a people at the time, and the political scheme and everything else, and subsequently leaving the Roman military, mainly because, first of all, his conscience started driving him to expand his own awareness. The other thing was the spear was starting to become a political symbol for various other factions that were wanting to overthrow the Romans of the area. So both of these things, in addition to the fact that he was believing the spear was starting to speak to him with a voice. Now, later on in the book, it does appear to be the voice of Christ, but at first Longinus is questioning his own sanity in my story about why is this thing talking to me? Is it that I'm just going crazy? Am I feeling guilt over this event that took place, or is this thing actually speaking to me? And if it is speaking to me, what does this mean? Is it my own self talking to me? You see where I'm going with this? It's not necessarily, the Christ voice is just a symbol in this. That was one of the catalysts that had him basically leave the Roman military and the other ones that I cited, which he, again, then goes up into Gaul and studies with the Druids and so forth.
That makes tremendous sense. You know, so much of the time we hear something in our own head. And I'm going to go ahead and pick on Oral Roberts for a moment. And when he says that God said he had to come up with $10 million or he should kill himself, was God talking to him or was he talking to him?
That's a really good point. Interesting.
That this is a common thing that oftentimes there's a point of conjecture over who the author of a certain inner narrative is.
Right.
But and I love the way that you make use of that because it's so relative and universal to the human experience. We all wonder, where did that come from? Did I make that up? And you do a very good job of intertwining that
right, so
that it becomes its own palpable, tangible character in the story.
Oh, well, thank you.
But if we were going to look at all the possible protagonists and antagonists in the known and unknown world of literature, and, you know, certainly if there's some idea, some value to this idea that we choose our life and that we choose to play the roles that we do,
mm-hmm.
This is kind of, in all the roles that are out there, kind of an unusual one, that you're going to play the one that's historically famous for making the Jesus kebab.
Yeah.
You know? So what spoke to you? Why did you choose this guy? What's that about?
The only way I can answer that, and I've been asked that several times, is that he chose me. When I started writing this book, it wasn't going to be about a Roman centurion or anything in the Roman time period, actually. The initial title of the book was simply The Merlin Factor. And I wanted to convey a story that was enlightening to people in the sense that they could relate to awakening their own inner Merlin that I spoke of a few minutes ago. And as I started writing it, though, I got fairly far into, about a third of the way into it, and I just found my protagonist wasn't compelling the way I needed him to be. So not necessarily starting from scratch, but I started being open to other possibility of who could be the leading man, so to speak, or woman. It didn't necessarily have to be a man. But what ended up happening was I started just looking through history, and there were a couple obscure characters that I found who somewhat fit the bill, if you want to call it that. And the more I looked at Longinus, the more I realized this is the guy that needs to be in this story, in the first person, so to speak, and be the hero of the story, if you want to call it that. So as I was going through my books of Roman history, and particularly the time of Christ, that whole time period has always been extremely fascinating to me to begin with. But there are various minor characters, if you will, that are referred to in the Bible and other texts that we don't necessarily know that much about, yet can become larger than life as being a cog in the wheel of this event in history, so to speak. You could look back at some movies, Barabbas, another older movie called The Robe with Richard Burton. Those are two, Ben-Hur, that's another one. I'm going way back, mainly because we don't make them like that anymore, unfortunately. But these were pretty obscure characters in the time. Now, some of them may have been fictitious. The Roman officer that was portrayed in The Robe, I believe, was fictitious. But Barabbas wasn't. Barabbas is referred to in the Bible. But they are minor characters in this epic story. Longinus is also one of these characters in that epic story. And I just found that his story has never been told. And my account, though fictional, is a conglomeration of various accounts that I've read. And the more I studied and researched him, the more fascinating I became, and the more I realized that this was the person that needed to be the lead in this story, so to speak. Because he also represented the everyday man and woman. He crosses genders in that sense that there's an element of the human condition that doesn't change. And he represents that everyday common man, even though he's set 2,000 years ago. I think that's why a lot of people who read it, just they see themselves in this character and going through these trials and tribulations to a minor extent, to a major extent. Not every experience we have on a spiritual level or any other level is going to be so profound that it catapults us into the next level of consciousness. It's the steps are incremental, I think. And Longinus goes through a lot of incremental steps in that sense, just as we all do. That's reality of life on Earth. So I just thought after doing the research that he was the one. He was the man. But initially, he jumped out at me. And then, like I said, once I started doing the research, he definitely fit the bill. So
I love that your protagonist found you and you mm-hmm. found him somewhere in that space in between.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole process of writing for me, too. I mean, I might start with the basic outline, but the story starts coming through me, and I'm writing it as if I'm watching a movie. And otherwise, it has to just flow like that, and Longinus' story just did. So it was wonderful.
I'm glad you were a good listener. Mm. I want to welcome anyone who may have just joined us. The show is You Are What You Love, and I'm Wishali, the wild child of the airwaves, the spiritual hostess with the wild woman mostess. And we've been talking to my favorite author, Stephen Maines, and I want to encourage you to go to his website, Stephen Maines, M-A-I-N-E-S. And we're talking about his book, Longinus, Book One of the Merlin Factor. And you can also see the Longinus, Book One of the Merlin Factor trailer on YouTube. And I want to again remind you that the address for that is youtube.com/Purple Haze Press. And it is a stunning, just an absolutely stunning, exquisite trailer. It's not time intensive, so if you want to get on the computer and watch it, it's not going to be one of these 10-minute things. You've got to make sure that you've got enough food and water to survive watching this before you move on in your day. But when you were making this trailer, what was your intention? I mean, it's visually stunning.
It really is, isn't it? Jeff Bedrick is the Flash animator on this, and the whole thing just came together. It's beautiful. It really is. I was very, very impressed. And I saw it in my head, and when I wrote it, it's, you know, shot for shot, it's basically what I was seeing. But even more, because it is stunning. It really is. And it's 90 seconds. Like you said, it's not 10 minutes long. There's not a huge commitment here. But what I was trying to capture was the essence of the book, the intensity of the experience of this man, and the, as I was just talking about a moment ago, just the fact that he is an everyday guy who had this profound experience, and then step by step was going down the path to expand this experience, if you will. And I think the animation captures it pretty well, especially right after you see the stabbing and the look on this guy's face, and it's like, oh, wow, something just happened. Something just happened. And what was it? You know, and that's the whole rest of the story is trying to figure this out for him from his perspective, I'm saying now. And I think the trailer captures that really well, the intensity of the moment, and you know, without being over the top melodramatic about it, it conveys what the book is about. And I'm very pleased with it.
I got to tell you, I think my favorite still is Longinus on his horse in battle with that spear glowing.
Oh, that's great.
It could compete with any Renaissance painting for just having that enlightened glow.
Yeah, it's very majestic, isn't it?
Oh, it's just an exquisite work of art.
It
if
is,
you just want to go to YouTube and see an exquisite work of art, youtube.com/Purple Haze Press, and watch the Longinus trailer, and I encourage you to send it to a friend, especially if you have somebody else who appreciates a thing of beauty. And, you know, my sense of it when I first saw it is, okay, you got this guy Longinus who pierces the side of Christ, so does that mean that this is like a religious book? Are we opening ourselves up to some Bible thumping here?
Yeah.
Does it have a religious undertone or underpinning or current to it?
Yeah, I get that a lot, and it's interesting because as soon as people start getting into it, that's one of the things that hooks them, is that it's not that at all.
And the trailer gives you that introduction, lets you know, no, you don't have to get religious-phobic on me here.
Exactly, and it doesn't take it from any one perspective. If anything, it shows the commonality of everything that was going on in the region at the time, and the similarities instead of the differences in taking one stance, so to speak. And no, it's not that at all. And when I first got done with the book, I was kind of afraid of that at first, to be honest with you, that people would take it as a religious book. And to the point that when people would ask, well, what's it about? Instead of saying, oh, it's about the Roman centurion that supposedly pierced the side of Christ while he was on the cross, I would say, it's about a Roman centurion. And just leave it at that, because I was afraid what people would read into it off the bat. Now, that was probably my bad. I mean, you know, because it's not about that. It's not a religious book. I've had guys read it who are hardcore football addicts, okay? Bear Swiggin, just, you know, they've read a book maybe 10 years ago. And they read this book, and they love it. There's a lot of action in it. There's a love story in it that's not too over the top. There's history in it. And, you know, with this type of book, you can't help but have a spiritual subtext, and that's okay. That's good, because it's all part of life. It's all part of the one mentality, if you will. You can't escape it in everyday life, but that's not what it's about, if that makes sense.
Well, it drives the multi-dimension of these characters, and what's pushing them to grow in ways that is outside of their comfort zone and is probably not anything they would ever imagine they would have to deal with on an interior climate.
Right, right.
So, who does the voiceover in Longinus, the trailer on YouTube?
A wonderful actor by the name of Mark Coulson, and boy, was he a find. He just captures Longinus to a T, and his deep, gravelly, I can't even imitate it. He's so perfect with it. And
he's audio testosterone.
He's great. Every woman that I've had watch this thing so far, that's the first question. Oh, who's doing the voiceover?
is he wearing?
Yeah, exactly right. It's hilarious. But it's great because he captures Longinus to a T. And he's also did the voiceover for the Longinus, the audio version coming out on CD here pretty soon. He did the whole, now it's an abridged version, of the book itself. But he did the whole read for that, and he just did a wonderful job.
So people can look forward to the Longinus book on CD on the website, and I'm assuming that you'll also have a downloadable MP3 file.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Great, because no iPod is complete without being penetrated by Longinus.
There you go.
So let's go back here to a minute to the richness of the storytelling, mm-hmm. and the multidimensional characters in it. So Longinus finds himself assigned to this hill, and the Romans did a lot of crucifixions. That's not anything particularly new under the sun. And
So
this duty of him having to stand guard while they're crucifying people, well, he probably had done that many times before.
Yes. Yeah. This was just another day at the office, so to speak, for him.
And why did he stick his... I mean, the guy's already on the cross. He's already nailed to the cross.
Mm-hmm.
So why did he have to stick him?
Well, I talk about that a little bit in the opening pages. At this particular time of year, it was at Passover. And on this particular day, the bodies, the prisoners, had to be down from off the crosses by sunset. So it's interesting in the research I did. There's a lot of different opinions as to why he stabbed Jesus. One of them is just to get him down off the cross, period. I mean, you read that in the Bible. I believe it's the book of John. And hence it was a merciful act because it saved Jesus from some pretty gruesome techniques that they would use to kill the prisoners if they weren't already dead when they had to bring him off the cross. It's kind of ridiculous, actually, because instead of just stabbing him, if they needed him to get off the cross and they weren't dead yet, instead of just stabbing him or doing something like that, they would brutalize them, break their legs, smash their skull in, et cetera, et cetera. And in this case, Longinus, for some reason, reached up with his spear and poked him, basically, to see if he was alive or if he was dead, and that was basically the final act. And so he saved Jesus' body from being brutalized in that sense. So a lot of people believe that it was an act of mercy. Whether it was conscious act of mercy on his part is a different story.
Right.
And then there are other factions who believe that it was a malicious thing for him to do. That I've read one account where people actually believed that he did that to have some of the body fluids flow out of Christ, who supposedly raised people from the dead, did miraculous healings, to splash on him because he was near blind, Longinus, supposedly. And he wanted the body fluids to be splashed on his own eyes to be healed. I take that one with a grain of salt.
But I have a hard time believing that the Roman army would keep a near blind man as a centurion.
Well, you can hide it really well, too. That's my only explanation for that. I mean, I've worn glasses since I was 5 years old, the old Coke bottle kind before, you know, we had laser surgery, and I was able to hide the fact, I wouldn't wear my glasses at school, and I was able to hide the fact that I, you know, didn't have very good sight. So I can believe that he was able to do it. But again, that particular angle on that, on the event, is a bit of a stretch for me, but...
Right. Even before I read Longinus, what I had heard, or the research that I had come across, was that when somebody is nailed to the crucifix, the cross, that what it does is it pinches off your diaphragm, and your diaphragm mm-hmm. has got to come down in order for you to bring lung oxygen into your lungs.
Right.
And the only way that the person could get any air in would be to, forgive the graphicness of this, is to take their weight and to bear it on the nail in their foot and literally
yes.
lift themselves up
yeah.
so that they could release a diaphragm enough to gasp a bit for air.
Right.
And hence, this is why... the first wave was to go, and if the person was, you weren't sure if they were alive or not because they're not breathing a lot,
mm-hmm,
so there
mm-hmm.
would be a margin for confusion about if they've really died or not, is if they pierced their side, if water came out, that would tell the Roman soldier, centurion, that the pericardium had burst,
right.
which is a sac of water around the heart. Therefore, nobody is going to be alive if their pericardium has already burst. Therefore, the person is dead, and you can just move on to the others. And if they pierce it and blood comes out, then their next phase is then to go to break the legs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was phase one of, is this person dead?
Right.
And, okay.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, the whole purpose of crucifixion was suffocation, and you broke it down really well as to the process of it. And the reason for the breaking of the legs is obvious. That way they can't push up anymore to take that breath, so they suffocate permanently. In Longinus's case, it's not clear whether, I mean, the Bible talks about body fluids coming out. Well, does that mean blood, water, et cetera?
Or a combination thereof, right?
But, it, you know, from the research I did, it was the final act that doomed him and saved him from, at the same time, from being brutalized in the sense just described. So
right, that they then took his body down intact and moved it. So we get this idea that here's this guy, he's very comfortable in his military zone.
Right.
He's very comfortable as being this battle-hardened, emotionally unavailable guy that's just doing his thing. And then there's this unexpected element that starts to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We begin as readers to be introduced to this relationship that he has with this woman.
Yes, yes.
And try though he may, he cannot sterilize it of any kind of authentic emotional connection. He can't find the right emotional antiseptic to not acknowledge that there's something profound happening here.
Right, right. And so she ends up being on, Irina is the character you're talking about, and she ends up being on this journey with him in spite of him. And yeah, that was their whole dynamic is really interesting in that sense too. As I was writing it, it was not really something that I think is any one particular. That's another question I get asked a lot too: is this based on a person or what? And it's Irina. Most of the characters are based on a conglomeration of people that I've known, sure, but they're also kind of archetypes in that sense. And in this sense, they are going on the same journey. Possibly, you know, just different, the paths differ slightly is all. But they help each other on levels unseen.
And don't get me wrong, I think the sex scenes in this book are really hot. And what I find really interesting about Irina is, in, apparently in addition to like her being very hot in bed, is that... And I could go on endlessly about making some Longinus spear jokes here.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll don't need to go there right now.
We'll infer it.
Yeah.
Irina is a really strong, well-developed, well-defined female character. I mean, she's not a doormat. She's not mamsy-pamsy.
Right, right.
She doesn't mince her words. She doesn't have a self-esteem problem. She's really incredibly well-formed character.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. She's an amazing woman, and the fact that she's a woman is almost incidental. And what I mean by that is, I build the characters from a basic, or at least I attempt to build the characters from the basic human condition and emotion that we all can share. And we play the various roles that we play because of society, because of culture, and a variety of reasons, and obviously also because of our biology, our sex, and whatever. But the core human emotions, I think, they cross over, male or female. It doesn't really matter. Now, in Irina's case, you know, of course, women, the way they were treated 2,000 years ago, and in some cases today, in spots around the world, wasn't exactly as equal, okay, to put it mildly. Yet there were pockets of individuals that had their own way of things, their own business, if you will. Irina was a prostitute that had her own house, so to speak, of ill repute. So in that sense, she was a businesswoman. Perhaps, well, definitely looked down on by certain factions of men, and especially the Jewish sect at the time. But that didn't mean that she would cower and be a weakling in the sense of that we might think of someone in that position. Instead, she took her lot in life and did what she wanted to do with it and made it quite successful, frankly. Now, if she fell in love with a Roman centurion along the way, so be it. And if he spurned her or wanted to be with her or not, so be it. She was strong in the sense that she knew herself, knew her capital S self. So it didn't matter what she did or what those thought of her around her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned in that. And now that wasn't all that common back then for the female of the human race, again. But like I said, there were individuals that did exemplify that, and she came out to be one of them in my story. So,
and she's only one of a bevy of incredibly dynamic, tangible, compelling characters. Mm. You've got a rabbi in there.
Jacoby, yeah.
You've got some druids in there.
Mm.
You've got a Celt, this big Conan O'Brien, red-haired, mustache-sporting giant.
Not Conan O'Brien, but just Conan the Barbarian. Love Conan O'Brien, but that's not quite where you wanted to go with that.
No, I mean, Conan O'Brien's a tall, skinny guy, and this is a tall, hulking guy. Well, but as far
yes,
as the,
exactly.
the mane of
All
red hair.
All due respect to Conan O'Brien, love you, but that's not quite what we were going for.
No, but I got to tell you, your writing of him did conjure the whole big red hair,
yes,
you know.
And yes, Dosemeanor is the character you're referring to.
Yes, and
yes.
Conan O'Brien is famous for that tsunami of
yes,
wave
yes.
of red hair that comes in the front.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and some of these characters, Jacoby, Dosemeanor, all these guys, they're all there and characters unto their own right, but they're all there to serve the purpose of one way or another helping Longinus on his journey, as we have people that we surround ourselves with, consciously or unconsciously, who are there to help us on our journey. And that's what these people represent. They are friends, yes, they are lovers, some of them, Irina, et cetera, et cetera. But we are all here to experience this thing called life together, and that's what these people are there to help Longinus on his journey. And the fact that they are, and thank you, by the way, for saying that they're such depthful characters and well-rounded and et cetera. I think the sense of just being individualized expressions of humanity is important when building a character, if that makes any sense at all. They need to be separate people, yet part of the whole of humanity and fit together in this big puzzle called life. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but that's what I shoot for when I write characters. So.
It makes sense in the same way that that's relative to non-literature-based reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want to welcome anyone who's joined us. The show is You Are What You Love. I'm Washali, the wild child of the airwaves. And today my guest is my favorite author on the planet, Stephen Maines. And again, I want to encourage you to go to his website. Stephen, that's Stephen with a V, Maines, M-A-I-N-E-S. And we're talking about his book, Longinus, Book 1 of the Merlin Factor. And you are invited officially and formally to go to youtube.com/ Purple Haze Press. And there is the most exquisite 90-minute flash animation trailer.
90-second.
Next, what did I say, 90
minutes?
Forgive me.
That's a bit of a commitment. But
anytime I start talking about
a 90-minute movie, how's that?
That's good. I guess anytime I start talking about a spear, I have a tendency to go for longer, harder, deeper, faster. Once again, my own Freudian thing is revealing itself. The 90-second trailer that'll give you a real insightful introduction to the story, to the characters, but if you go for no other reason, then you can appreciate a fine piece of art, an absolute breathtaking flash animation. Again, youtube.com/ Purple Haze Press. And if at any time you forget some of this stuff and you want to know more about how to get a hold of Stephen or his book, or you want a link to the trailer, you can always email the Wild Woman, v@purplev.com. And if you go to my website, purplev.com, in addition to my books, You Are What You Love and Wisdom Rising, you will also be able to purchase any of Stephen Maines' books. And I want to let our listening audience know this is part one of a part two interview. And part one, we are covering predominantly Longinus, book one of the Merlin Factor. And especially for those of you who have already read the book, and you would murder your mother to get to book two, Part two of this interview will be delving into Mirrodin, book two of the Merlin Factor. So I want to invite you back next week when Stephen and I talk about, resume our conversation about Longinus, and then open up the doorway to exploring Mirrodin, book two of the Merlin Factor. And if we're real lucky, Stephen will give us upcoming previews of book three of the Merlin Factor. So, Stephen, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and I can see with the clock on the wall that we'll probably have to continue this in part two of our conversation, is stories have been a time-honored, traditional way of transmitting and disseminating sacred information.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, it certainly has.
And if somebody were to come to you and say, so why did you have to write this story? What is it that you're intentionalizing in your transmission of this story? What is the essence of it? What is the archetypical message?
Well, it's interesting because this, as I said earlier, this story, particularly this story, picked me. And the only thing I can say is that when I write a story, I'm compelled to write. Sometimes I don't want to do it. It's tedious. It's hours of research and actual writing of it. I'm compelled to do it because there's something inside me that is, I'm seeing this story. And as far as the archetype that is conveyed in Longinus, various archetypes, actually, and they're just pointing to the phase of the part of the human condition that needs to be expressed and acknowledged, particularly in our society that has become so materialistic and so instant gratification and everything else, that we've lost sight, I think, on a lot of levels of what it is to actually be here on this planet in your skin, in my skin, anybody's skin, and various experiences that we're here to experience. So, without getting too dramatic about it, that's essentially what I'm compelled to share. And in storytelling, you put it in a format that we can all relate to, because all of our lives are a story. Every day of your life is a story. How was your day, honey, when you walk in the door? Your spouse asks. Well, you tell the story of the day. Every experience you have on this planet is a story. So the best way to convey something on a deeper level, to retap, so to speak, on a deeper level, the whole meaning of being here, is through storytelling. And I'm just compelled to do that. And that's the best way I can answer that.
You know, I'm glad you brought up this element about the story, because there's nothing in this story or the character's agenda that's goal oriented. It's all 100% process.
Yes, and I personally find that to be the most life enhancing books when I read them, that it's about the process and not necessarily the goal or the end, as it were.
I find that spiritually, that's the higher, ultimately defining reality about life, is that it is a process. But we're so distracted because instant gratification is constantly driven by a goal.
Right.
And so we're all obsessed and distracted by the goal, and we forget the value of the process. I know so many times people will say, well, why am I going through this? And right now things aren't going the way that I would like. And I'm constantly reminding them, your life is an entire journey, and basically what you've done is you've pulled over at a 7-Eleven to take a leak, and you're trying to define your entire life by, why am I here in this convenience store bathroom?
Right.
Because
That's great.
It's a stop in the journey, babe, and it's probably so you don't soil the interior of your car. It has value.
Right, and it's so funny because in those situations, we see the value of it way down the road after the fact, unfortunately, instead of seeing it in the moment, and or just maybe not seeing it in the moment, but accepting it in the moment as part of the journey. So,
if you wanted to explain to people what is the gem of this book, if they're looking to experience something in a book, if they're looking to vicariously learn experientially or walk a mile in Longinus sandals, his Roman military-issued sandals, what would you say, if this is a value to you, this is what you get by picking up this book and cracking it open, in addition to setting your eyes on, as we've already talked about, literary opium of the 21st century?
Well, if nothing else, it's, and I think this is part and parcel why so many people relate to it, is that it's okay to go three steps forward, two steps back, or three steps forward, four steps back. That it's all part of the process, as we were just talking about. And I think once people read the book, that's one of the things they latch onto, is that they, wow, I'm not the only one that does that. And, you know, because a lot of people, they do that. They'll go three steps forward, four steps back, and berate themselves for not sticking the three steps out there and not having to worry about going back. That's not the way it works. You know, I know from my own spiritual experiences or growth or whatever, it's just, as we were talking about, it's, the process is the way it is. And for most of us, it is three steps forward, two steps back, or, as I just said, three and four, et cetera, most of our lives. And you know what? That's okay. You don't need to beat yourself up because you're not enlightened on the hilltop, you know, by Sunday or by the time you're 40 or 50 or 90. I think that's what a lot of people take away from it, from the book, is, and that's why they see themselves in Longinus, because that's exactly what he's experiencing in the story, constantly questioning himself and why he's doing this and why isn't this working when, you know, the spirit's talking to me like this. And there are times that he does accept it, and he's fully in the moment and fully in awareness, and then he goes right back. I mean, towards the end, when he's in that cell, And the Christ figure appears to him, and they have that little conversation. And the Christ figure is basically saying, well, you forget, you know, but that's okay. It's part of the process of being human, is learning, relearning, and each time is, you may not see it, but each time is another step forward.
I love that. That's beautiful. I think few people realize that the root of the word remembering is remembering something, taking something that has gotten dismembered and reattaching it, remembering oneself. And this is something that you capture with flawless skill, is this angst about the human experience, that it doesn't go the way we intellectually secrete from our frontal lobe and dictate that it, and mandate that it should. That it has its own life, a life of its own. It has its own direction. And there is this unifying principle that expresses itself independent of our, but I should be doing something else. It should be looking differently. I shouldn't be feeling this way.
Right. We're so attached to the outcome that if it doesn't come out the way we had seen it, you know, our world falls apart. And that's what we need to kind of get away from.
Beautiful, sweetheart. Absolutely exquisite. And I want to remind our listening audience that this is part one of a part two interview with author Stephen Maines. And we've been talking about his book, Longinus, book one of The Merlin Factor. And you can join Stephen and I next week, same bat time, same bat channel, and we'll be talking about part two of exploring of Longinus, book one of The Merlin Factor, and we'll actually give you a sneak preview into Mirrodin, book two of The Merlin Factor. And I want to remind you all that Stephen's website is Stephen with a V, Stephen Maines, MAINES.com. Ladies, go to his website. The guy's just a total babe. Go check him out. I do it all the time when he's not looking. And I want to remind you all that his trailer can be viewed at youtube.com/purplehazepress. And please feel free to enjoy the trailer. Feel free to send it to your friend. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Oh, thank you.
And to my listening audience, until we do it again next week, rock on, babies.
You've been listening to You Are What You Love with author Vaishali. To order Vaishali's book, You Are What You Love, or to schedule a private self-emergent session with Vaishali, visit youarewhatyoulove.com. Thanks for joining us, and remember, you are what you love, and you love whatever you give your attention to. So love wisely.